New York police arrest students occupying the administration building at Columbia University.
There was an order to clear the street, and then they arrested me.
Life-threatening heat across Asia.
We are trying our best to keep them alive and well. We're doing everything in our knowledge.
And he walked 100 kilometers to pay off a social media promise.
Polish soccer fan Jan Juric in February pledged online to walk to the stadium of any team whose goalkeeper scored in Poland's top-flight soccer league.
Today is Wednesday, May 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strobe.
Guys, get moving back.
Come on, get back.
We're back.
Large numbers of New York City police officers have begun entering the Columbia University as dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters remained on the campus.
I was standing in the middle of Amsterdam at 114th Street, observing this large force of police moving in to arrest students at Columbia. And there was an order to clear the street, to allow pedestrians to travel through a gate that they had blocked, so there was no pedestrians traveling anywhere, and then they arrested me.
Demonstrators had occupied Hamilton Hall hours earlier Tuesday after setting up an encampment earlier in the month. New York police say non-students were taking over the demonstration, making it dangerous.
We are seeing the tactics changing in a way that's endangering public safety. These once peaceful protests are being exploited by professional outside agitators, and the safety of all students, faculty, and staff are now a concern.
New York Mayor Eric Adams said these external actors have no affiliation with Columbia University.
And the individuals we're going to show is an outside agitator with a history of escalating situation and trying to create chaos.
The students have been protesting on the Manhattan campus since the previous day, opposing Israeli military action in Gaza and demanding the school divest from companies they claim are profiting from the conflict.
Our focus right now is on getting a ceasefire and hostages home. That is the most urgent thing.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived at Ben-Gurion Airport near Tel Aviv on Tuesday night, in preparation for meetings on Wednesday. He'll be pushing for the current ceasefire deal.
The Israelis have put a strong proposal on the table. They've demonstrated that they're willing to compromise. And now it's on Hamas. And no more delays, no more excuses. The time to act is now.
The spiraling humanitarian crisis has prompted calls from Israel's Western and Arab partners to do more to facilitate the entry of aid into Gaza, where most people are homeless, may face famine, disease is widespread, and where much civilian infrastructure lies in ruins. Blinken said he will address all of this with the Israelis.
It's also critically important that there be a clear, affirmative list of items, of products that are required for the well-being of people in Gaza, that there's a clear list, that it's well understood, and that we don't have arbitrary denials of products that need to get into Gaza.
Despite the pending ceasefire, Israel is moving forward with the Rafah offensive. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday vowed to go ahead with the operation, despite international concern over the fate of more than 1 million Palestinians sheltering there. The United States has not seen a credible Israeli plan for the military operation in Rafah that would address its concerns. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vendit Patel.
And so any kind of operation that does not address some of these key concerns would certainly be opposed by us. I'm not going to get into any hypotheticals, but this is something we're continuing to engage with our partners in Israel. Conversations continue to be happening at all levels, and continue to press forward on those conversations and asking for what their plans may or may not be as it pertains to Rafah.
With a potential arrest warrant hanging over his head from the International Criminal Court, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday said if the court issues the warrants, it would be an outrage of historic proportions.
International bodies like the ICC arose in the wake of the Holocaust committed against the Jewish people. They were set up to prevent such horrors, to prevent future genocides. Yet now, the International Court is trying to put Israel in the dock. It's trying to put us in the dock as we defend ourselves against genocidal terrorists and regimes, Iran, of course, that openly works to destroy the one and only Jewish state. Branding Israel's leaders and soldiers as war criminals will pour jet fuel on the fires of anti-Semitism, those fires that are already raging on the campuses of America and across capitals around the world.
Netanyahu said arrest warrants from the court would constitute moral and historical bankruptcy.
The number of Russian soldiers killed in combat since the beginning of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine remains a secret that the Kremlin goes to great lengths to hide. However, open-source research has recently yielded figures that show Moscow's losses have been heavy. Elizabeth Cherniff narrates this report by Ricardo Marquina.
A memorial ceremony is held by occupation officials in Crimea for Russian soldiers killed in action. Ceremonies like this, as well as public information derived from obituaries in the local media, give independent sources like the opposition media outlet Mediazona precious tidbits of information. Those added up to a figure of 50,000 Russian soldiers killed in action during these 2 years of war. Their investigation was based on open-source intelligence with the hope of shedding light on facts the Kremlin has kept hidden, at least among the sources it can control.
You need to know which open sources are very difficult to influence by any state. So new graveyards is something that you can't deny. If you make satellite imagery of new graveyards that weren't there a year ago, that's pretty objective, isn't it?
Some observers believe the figures this research has yielded are much lower than the real ones. Russian society, they say, no longer uses social networks to talk about political or military issues as freely as they did a decade ago. Access to information is much more limited now than it was in 2014.
10 years ago, people were more open. There were much fewer people who kept their pages closed and not accessible to outsiders. It was possible to open the page of practically anyone and see what kind of life he or she led.
Kyiv, for its part, has given an official death toll, although that too is questioned by some. President Volodymyr Zelensky in February said 31,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died since the start of the full-scale invasion, but that figure has also not been verified. Russia's tactics have been dubbed by some as equivalent to a, quote, meat grinder, unquote. Despite mounting evidence of extremely high casualties, they see no sign that Moscow will change the way it is fighting the war.
In Russia's tactics of assault, we've seen over and over again that just throwing bodies into the firing line counts as valid tactics as far as Russia is concerned. If they throw in more bodies than Ukraine has bullets, then they win.
Russia shows no intention of clearing the fog of disinformation on its casualty figures or on the realities that its soldiers are living in the battlefields of Ukraine. For Ricardo Marquina, Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News.
We're following these other stories from around the world. The first scientist to publish a sequence of the COVID-19 virus in China staged a sit-in protest outside his own lab after the Chinese government locked him out. It's a sign of Beijing's continuing pressure on scientists conducting research on the coronavirus. Haiti's Transition Council on Tuesday named Edgar Leblanc-Fils, the former Senate president, to head the council last week as it seeks to bring security back to the violence-racked Caribbean nation. Marijuana in the United States will be reclassified by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. It'll move to a less dangerous drug category, a historic shift that could have wide ripple effects across the country. It would recognize the medical use of cannabis and acknowledge it has less potential for abuse than some of the most dangerous drugs. However, it would not legalize marijuana.
In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, a majority of young voters in the U.S. presidential election say they wish they had someone other than Joe Biden or Donald Trump to choose from. Some of that has to do with the candidates' advanced ages. But who are the younger voters backing Biden or Trump? VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
In a race between the two oldest presumptive major party nominees to run for president, there are questions in this campaign about the candidate's fitness for office, especially from younger voters. Desmond Kager would like a different choice.
Republicans or Democrats can, you know, put someone on the ticket that actually is, you know, worth voting for, then I'll vote for them.
A Pew Research survey last week found that two-thirds of voters under age 30 would replace both candidates if they had the chance. So who are the young people backing Biden or Trump? Concerns about reproductive rights means Biden has the support of Francesca Paniello.
I think abortion is important to me, abortion care, the right to be able to choose.
Abortion rights and recreational marijuana are both on the Florida ballot this November. That's bringing out younger voters for Democratic causes, says Jaden D'Onofrio.
Youth voters have a real opportunity to shape the electoral landscape here in Florida. We've seen that the right to choice and recreational marijuana are critical to the beliefs and importance of youth voters and what's top of mind for them, especially with the right to choice.
Some young people oppose Biden for his support for Israel in the war in Gaza. But that's likely to earn him the vote of Eliana Stein.
Right now, for me, one of the most important things is continued support for Israel, especially throughout this conflict that's going on. So I really appreciate everything that President Biden has been doing to support the country of Israel in this current conflict.
Young people supporting Trump include Wisconsin voters Brianna Bonilla and Jonathan Boyer.
I've tried to have conversations with people who don't like Trump, and they're like, you can leave, I don't want to talk to you more. So I think that's the main problem. People aren't open to listening. They're just like, if you like Trump, you're a horrible person, or just that. So I feel like...
Yeah, there's never any open discussion,
I feel
really.
Like if you're able to have an open discussion, I feel like a lot of people make it say, you know, they just come off like you can't say anything, or they won't talk to you, or yep. They'll tell everyone, and...
Young Trump supporters are accustomed to people their age questioning their political choices, says Isaiah Turner.
I'll go to the bars wearing a Trump 2024 hat, and I get weird looks like crazy all around from people, but I don't really, it doesn't bother me.
Turner says he admires Trump's stance against corruption.
I think there is a ton of corruption. I think that there's a lot of very scandalous things that is going on all over the world. And I think Trump is one of the only men that has actually had the balls on him, so to say, to call out these people and not be afraid of them. I just feel like he's going to do what's best for the country, you know?
A Reuters Ipsos poll in March showed Americans between the ages of 18 and 29 favor Biden over Trump by 3 percentage points. That's a far smaller margin than the 24% gap that Biden won the youth vote with 4 years ago. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
In his New York criminal trial, Donald Trump has been held in contempt of court and fined $9,000 for repeatedly violating a gag order that barred him from making public statements about witnesses, jurors, and some other people. The judge warned that if it continues, Trump could be jailed.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope, along with Scott Walterman.
The Philippines on Wednesday accused China's Coast Guard of elevating tensions in the South China Sea after its use of water cannons that damaged two of its vessels. The Philippine Coast Guard says the Chinese are using a much higher water pressure that has resulted in structural damage to its vessels. The Chinese use the water cannons to spray the Philippine vessels when they enter contested waters in the South China Sea.
A heat wave in Asia has governments warning people of health risks. VOA's Lori London has more.
The weeks-long heat wave that has been gripping the region with record high temperatures has led to school closings and, again, urgent health warnings in a number of countries. Many residents in Hanoi have chosen to spend their Reunification Day holiday indoors as the heat wave scorches Vietnam, with temperatures rising as high as 44 degrees Celsius in some parts of the country.
It's extremely hot, and it wears me out. My body is very tired and uncomfortable from all the sweating.
In eastern India's Kolkata city, which recorded a maximum temperature of 42 degrees Celsius, laborers on construction sites say they have no choice but to continue working under the sun for long hours.
We will not be able to tolerate the scorching heat if we do not take breaks. If we are not working while we are on duty, then we will not get paid. So it is a compulsion for us to keep working.
Several towns in Myanmar last week were on lists of the hottest spots worldwide. Scientists have said the number of heat-related deaths around the world has been rising significantly in recent years, along with temperatures. And not just human lives are at risk. In the Bangladeshi capital, pet shop owners were seen spraying water this week on animals and birds to help lower their body temperature.
We are trying our best to keep them alive and well. We're doing everything in our knowledge.
Experts say climate change is contributing to more frequent, severe, and longer heat waves during summer months as records continue to be broken.
Year after year, right? So normally this year beating the year before. But because of the El Nino effect, that leaves particular region hotter than normal.
Thailand scientist Pech Manopawder describes an ominous scenario for Southeast Asian regions if temperatures continue to rise over the next 5 years.
An inhabitable Earth pattern is coming, you know, because we might not be familiar with that. We think that we are fine with the hot weather, but now with the temperature, the heat wave, the intensity of the long period of hot weather, I think we will have to make sure that people know about the risk as well. You know, the number of people getting heat stroke increasing at a rapid rate as well. So even in the tropical country.
The persistent sweltering weather in Southeast Asia has also sparked fears of water shortages, power outages, and damage to agricultural crops. Lori London, VOA News, Washington.
China's share of the European electric vehicle market has doubled in less than 2 years, with Chinese automakers accounting for 20% of EVs sold in Europe just last year. The trend is raising alarm among European car makers, and they're considering pushing for new tariffs. Elizabeth Chernev narrates this report from Alfonso Beto in Barcelona.
The port of Barcelona is one of the key entry points for Chinese-made EVs to the European market. In 2021, nearly 2,000 Chinese-made vehicles arrived at the docks in Barcelona. Last year, that number reached 87,000. Those numbers are adding to concerns expressed by EU officials, including European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, about growing trade with China.
What we want is China to respect the level playing field when it comes to access for our companies to the Chinese market, to respect transparency about subsidies.
The European Commission is investigating whether European and Chinese electric car manufacturers are competing under the same rules. On average, the cost of Chinese electric cars is at least 20% lower. The Commission says its investigation could result in anti-subsidy measures against China-made imports. Chery Auto, China's largest automaker by export volume, recently signed a joint venture with the Spanish company Ebro Motors to manufacture several models in Barcelona. Spain's leadership considers this an opportunity for growth.
This is a sign of the reindustrialization of Catalonia and the whole of Spain.
Members of Barcelona's car industry agree.
What Europe needs to do is promote EV manufacturing here in Europe, whether it be of European or Chinese makes.
As Europe's leaders and carmakers see it, China's aggressive incursion into the European electric car market comes with risks and opportunities. For now, Brussels will have to do a careful balancing act and decide whether it should impose tariffs or opt for greater collaboration with Beijing. For Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
And finally, a Polish soccer fan walked 100 kilometers to meet the goalkeeper of a professional football team. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan says it all started when he made a pledge on social media.
Polish soccer fan Jan Jurek in February pledged online to walk to the stadium of any team whose goalkeeper scored in Poland's top-flight soccer league. And on April 1st, his wager came through.
If I remember well, on February 7th, I made a post that if a goalkeeper scores a goal before the season ends, then I will go on foot to the stadium of a club he is playing for. And it happened on April 1st, April Fools. I woke up and saw the whole internet is talking about Gabriel Kobylak. The goalkeeper of Radomiak Radom scored a goal from 80 meters. I saw it and I remembered my old post. I reposted it, but I didn't expect it will become viral.
Jurek set off from the southeastern town of Sandomierz to Radom, over 60 miles south of Warsaw, for a Radomiak match. Navigating through muddy village tracks and national highways, he said it was all worth it. Before the match, he was presented with a signed jersey by the Radom's keeper, whose goal made the challenge happen.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, with Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
We are very much focused on finding a democratic path forward in Venezuela and promoting competitive elections, said Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs Brian Nichols in a recent interview.
As part of that process, the United States has offered sanctions relief to incentivize a more competitive election in Venezuela. Unfortunately, some of the steps that the Maduro side had agreed to undertake under the Barbados Agreement, they did not meet those requirements.
In violation of the 2023 Barbados Agreement, the Maduro government barred certain opposition candidates from running for president in 2024 and continued a crackdown on political activists and members of civil society. As a result, said Assistant Secretary Nichols, we were forced to suspend General License 44 on oil and gas, issuing a new license, General License 44A, which provides a 45-day winding down period.
But we're also still very much engaged in the process of supporting a competitive election. The selection of a unified opposition candidate, and Edmundo González Urrutia, and his acceptance by the electoral authorities in Venezuela is a very important positive step. The agreement on international observation in Venezuela with the European Union and the Carter Center in particular observing as another positive step. We hope to see continued other positive steps, and we remain open to reciprocating to those positive steps going forward.
Assistant Secretary Nichols emphasized the importance of the present opportunity to increase the legitimacy of governance in Venezuela, to be responsive to the desires of the populace and the electorate is incredibly important, he said. And we hope that all of the stakeholders in Venezuela will move in that direction. We certainly believe that Venezuela can have a much better, more prosperous, successful, and inclusive future if competitive elections are allowed to take place there.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.